Jackson, Mr. Heeler?
Mr. Hessler.
Sorry.
It's fine.
Hessler, my fault.
May it please the court, Judge Posner, Judge Bauer, Judge Easterbrook. My name is Daniel Hessler, and I represent Ray Jackson. This is a sufficiency of the evidence challenge primarily, and the facts are critical. Ray Jackson has one hand on his head.
Well, I must say, I don't really understand your position at all.
Your position is you're appointed to this court. To discuss
No, my position is more than that I'm appointed to this court. The primary question is whether the facts in this case...
If you fight with a person, whether you punch him in the eye or you knock him over and he falls on his face, doesn't make any difference.
But the question is whether there's any evidence been presented that he fought with him. If he doesn't if he doesn't clench a fist, if he doesn't take a swing, if he doesn't use a weapon, if he doesn't make a threat, if none of those things happened, and none of those things happened in this case, is this statute violated? And Congress chose some words. They said that this statute is violated when someone inflicts bodily injury, and they used the word inflict. Now, it's important to remember how the injury happened in this case. Ray Jackson is down on his stomach, half underneath the car. The marshal is pressing down on him with his hand, and the marshal pulls a ligament in his thumb. So the question is whether those actions constitute infliction of bodily injury. The first question you have to ask is, what does the word inflict mean? And a preliminary way to narrow down the meaning of a word is by examining some of the other words that Congress could have used but didn't. And they could have used the word causes.
But his crime is forcibly resisting arrest.
His crime is more
And if
than
you're forced, pardon? No?
His crime is more than forcibly, there's an additional element of infliction of bodily injury.
We call the crime forcibly resisting arrest. And he's punished because in the course of forcibly resisting arrest, he causes an injury to one of the officers. If he hadn't resisted forcibly, the injury wouldn't have occurred.
I have two responses to that. First, that statute doesn't say that doesn't use the word causes; it uses the word inflicts. And second,
what's the difference? I don't get that.
Well,
why would that make a difference? Is there any sense to this? Why would Congress want to distinguish between an injury that occurs in the effort to subdue the person from his actually hitting them? I don't understand.
Well, that's a good question. So it brings us to the question of why did Congress choose the words that it chose?
Okay.
And
so
we think about the word inflict.
Who knows what's in their head? But let me ask you a practical question. Did Hurricane Andrew inflict damage on the city of Miami?
I would find that construction of that phrase awkward. I would say no.
It's perfectly normal. And in fact, I just looked it up online. That is the lead definition of inflict given in the American Heritage Dictionary. But of course, Hurricane Andrew is not aware, it's not conscious, it's just a wind blowing. But it inflicts damage. And then one wonders why somebody rolling on the ground couldn't inflict damage in the same way.
I think if you think about the word inflict, it has a connotation, if not necessarily a direct denotation, that suggests both intent and a direct inflictor to inflict the action. If you spill a cup of coffee on the ground and someone trips over it and falls, and a third person comes up to you and says, you just caused that person to...
Wait a minute, what if someone fleeing arrest accidentally collided with he's running down the sidewalk, fleeing from the police, and he's looking back, and he accidentally collides with a pedestrian and injures the pedestrian. No intent to hit him, not at all. He didn't want to hit anyone. That would impede his flight. Would you say that in that case, this fleeing criminal had not inflicted the injury on the pedestrian? If not, you'd have a great deal of trouble accounting for the injury, right? There would be no inflictor.
In that particular example, I think I would say that that person did inflict it, because if you run away...
He had no intent to.
There's two things that I think...
Okay, so we're past intent, so...
I think intent is part of it, but I think that foreseeability...
Apparently it's not an essential part.
I think it is one of the connotations of the word inflict. But I think foreseeability is another thing.
Okay,
if you're
it's certainly foreseeable if you resist arrest that the police are going to injure themselves in the course of subduing you.
I don't think it is foreseeable that if when you're down on your stomach on the ground that one of the marshals is going to pull a ligament in his thumb holding you down.
Well, the specifics of the injury are not foreseeable, but any time you get into a violent altercation with someone, that person, there's a significant risk that person becoming injured, either by whether you intended or not.
But as a factual matter, Ray Jackson didn't get into a violent altercation. He's standing there. He doesn't make a motion towards anyone. He doesn't threaten anyone. He doesn't draw a weapon.
Here's a wonderful quotation from the Oxford English Dictionary from Oliver Goldsmith. The rattlesnake inflicts its wound in a moment, then parts, and inflicts a second wound.
And the rattlesnake...
I bet the rattlesnake would not meet the mentation standards for criminal liability.
But the rattlesnake knows what it's doing. It's aiming, and it's striking where it means to. If you said it inflicted it with its tail, that would be another matter.
You say he didn't pull a weapon. He acted in a menacing fashion, and he was lucky not to get shot.
Yes. I don't know that he acted in a menacing fashion.
Oh, well, come on. He's pulling things out. He's pulling things out of his pocket.
His keys.
I mean, really, that's a little bit of reasonableness to your argument.
Congress chose the words that they chose, and it's up to you to figure out why they chose inflicts and not causes. And inflicts, there is even in the rattlesnake example, is something personal and does not denote
acts personal. It's just hungry.
It's not something that describes accidental occurrences. And there's
no, you said accidental.
I would accept accidental in situations where it is also foreseeable, but where it's accidental and unforeseeable, which is what we suggested that it is in this case. That is not infliction.
That has absolutely nothing to do with the word inflict. You can certainly inflict an injury unforeseeably.
But I don't think you would use the word inflict. And Congress chose that word. So did it mean to cover those kind of actions? And I think the answer is no. To simply equate inflict and cause, you'd be doing two things. You'd be rewriting a statute into something that Congress chose not to say, and creating a precedent that would radically stretch the reach of Section 111B. There is no published case remotely close to this fact. The Garcia Camacho case is distinguishable because Garcia Camacho clearly attacked the agent in that case, and Ray Jackson stood there. Now, he wasn't compliant. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing. But...
He didn't just stand there. I don't know why you keep saying that. That's not a description of the events here.
I think he was standing there. He was not doing what he was... He had one hand on his head, one hand in his pocket. He was down on one knee. He didn't move towards them. He didn't take an aggressive action. I think I will reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hesford. Mr. Wilson?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Eric Wilson on behalf of the United States. As is apparent, the disagreement on appeal stems from a disagreement about the facts. The defendant maintains, as he says in his brief, that he was a tackling dummy. The government maintains that he did almost everything that he could to forcibly resist arrest. The jury agreed with the government, and the government contends on appeal that it did so for good reason. The facts amply support the jury's verdict in this case. And with regard to whether or not the defendant inflicted bodily injury, it certainly does no, it doesn't offend the concept of causation to consider that by forcibly pushing up on the deputy marshal, which is what the evidence was in this case, and that the deputy marshal thereby tearing the ligament in his thumb, the defendant in this case did in fact inflict that bodily injury. With regard to whether or not the jury was properly instructed, the government would submit that the court need look no farther than its own precedent. The instruction in this case was entirely consistent with that precedent. And so for those reasons, the government would respectfully request that this court affirm the conviction and sentence of the defendant.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Hasler, how much time did he have? 1 minute? So?
Briefly. With respect to the precedent, Woody is not a precedent because Woody was decided at a time when injury was not an element of this offense. And so if injury is not an offense, an element, then clearly intent to injure could not have been an element back then. So this is the first court to decide whether there is any intent to injure as part of this statute. And,
but you've said many times intent is not required, and you keep coming back to it.
There is some element of intent.
No, there isn't. You said you could have a pure accident, as in the bystander collision case. Now,
in any case where there's intent, there's going to be foreseeability.
But I don't understand. That is not responsive. You've acknowledged there are cases of pure accident, which nevertheless satisfy your conception of infliction.
That's correct. But pure act, even there's a difference between pure causation and a foreseeability standard.
That's correct. But it's not a matter of intent. It's different. It's something else.
And both the instructions and the result in this case were based on a pure causation standard. Ray Jackson caused that injury, but he didn't inflict it. And incidentally, he didn't intend it, but that may not be relevant.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Hasler, and thank you to the Defender's Office for taking on the case. And the court will stand in recess.